don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Welcome to Education Nation, where every Saturday morning at 10:30, we grab our second cup of coffee and tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Pete Hegseth. School is now in session.
Well, good morning. You're listening to Education Nation, and I'm your host, Rebecca Hagstrom. Each week on the show, we talk about issues related to education that affect us right here in Minnesota, but also nationwide. Today, however, we're going to take a little minute, actually a whole show, to highlight and recognize my co-host, Pete Hegseth. Pete just finished his first book, and it's called In the Arena, and it's a call to action for all Americans. Pete, congratulations. I am so happy for you. Tell us about the
book.
Well,
thank you very much for having me. And this it has been such an honor for me to guest host this show with you. Learn how to do radio together.
Together. I think you had a little bit of an edge on
me
there.
Well, no, but you're a pro. You picked it up incredibly quickly. And we talk about topics that relate to education in this nation. And you're so passionate about it and informed on it. I'm learning as we go along. And, you know, writing a book is a learning process, too. And I feel like so much of what this show is about, educating people about what leads to a good education, what this country's all about, what a proper education looks like. In some ways, that's what I tried to do with the book In the Arena. It is another vehicle of education, I hope,
yes.
and a call to action to remind Americans what our country's all about, why it is special, why it's exceptional, and then make the argument for each generation, every citizen, to stand up and do their part.
Yeah.
And it's not a book about my life. It's not
no,
a biography.
No, I can vouch for that.
You know, I'm not audacious enough to believe I should be writing down what I've done in life at the age of 35. And nor is it a book. The book uses a speech by Teddy Roosevelt, which we can talk a little bit more about. Book's also not necessarily about Teddy Roosevelt. It uses a speech that he talks about it. A lot of people know the quote, "Man in the Arena." It's a famous quote. Mm-hmm. It uses that quote to kind of make the argument about why we need citizens here at home to be engaged, and then we need American leadership around the world.
Mm-hmm. So when did you first hear that quote? I know you talk in the book about the fact that you carry around the last part of that speech with you in your duffel bag.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, you know, what really prompted that in the first place and why this speech?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people think of the Man in the Arena, and it's called the Man in the Arena speech because they only know the quote. And the quote is so powerful. And people, a lot of people out there will know it when they hear it. It starts with, "It's not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly for worthy causes." And it goes on a little bit longer. It's just a powerful quote that to me animated that, you know, you're going to make mistakes, but you're never going to be always be successful. You're going to fail, but doggone it, get in the arena and fight for it and be willing to strive for worthy causes. The quote ends with, so your place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat. And I just thought, first came across it in college.
Okay.
And I printed it out on a simple white sheet of paper, put it in a black frame, as I say in the book, and I brought it with me in my tours in Guantanamo Bay, Iraq, and Afghanistan, just kind of as a daily reminder. And since when I would come home, I'd hang it up over my desk or put it where it
Great.
And then one day I thought, you know, what about the whole speech?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Maybe I should actually read the whole speech.
Maybe I should actually read the whole speech. Yeah, I love this quote. I'm sure he said a little bit more than that.
Right.
And it turns out the name of the speech is not Man in the Arena. The name of the speech is called Citizenship in a Republic. And Teddy Roosevelt.
Perfect for today.
It's such a. And so then I thought, okay, let me check it out. And when you read the entire speech, it felt like Teddy Roosevelt was echoing through the centuries saying, remember who we are and what we represent.
Right.
He was speaking to an elite French audience in 1910 in Paris, France. It was in between his presidency and before he sort of descended into the founder of the Progressive Party and some of the leftist things that he ended with. At that moment in time, it was really a reminder to French citizens, but also to Americans, because it was covered everywhere in the world and reprinted in the New York Times and over in Paris, everywhere, as what it means to if you want to keep a good, and really his thesis was very simple. If you want to keep a great republic, you have to have good citizens.
You know, true.
This is our government. This is ours to keep. If you don't want a republic, then you can have a great ruler who rules, and maybe you are fine for a while. But republics require good citizens. And it just, as I read it, I thought, man alive, that applies just as much today as it did then.
Absolutely.
And if anything, it's sort of un-PC before there was PC. Do you know what I mean?
Right, yep.
And I just felt like, yeah, not everybody's going to agree with every aspect of the speech, but if you pull out the general themes, man, it speaks to what America needs. And I actually reprinted the speech in the book as the last chapter so that people can engage with what Teddy Roosevelt said on April 23rd, 1910.
And now fast forward to this many years later, here we are in 2016, and I would say that the majority of our citizens don't even know that we live in a republic.
That's right. Well, you're seeing it right now in our in our presidential election, right? Talking about you know, one man, one vote, kind of populism, democracy, all of that. Well,
yeah,
our framers
think it is a democracy.
That's right. Our framers were very specific about a representative government that was going to be based on a constitution, and that's what a republic is. They had safeguards against the rule of the mob, the rule of the masses.
Right.
And that there are some rights and some given by God. That can't be taken away by a government or a majority.
Right.
And when
you
remember that and when you know that, then you're reminded of what makes America special and why we're going to have some conflicts about what our democracy or what our republic represents. But when you remember where we came from, it fortifies why we've been so successful this many years. And I just loved what Roosevelt had to say. And then I took to my basement to write about it.
I love it. I love it. That's great. I actually remember hearing you talk about this just, 6 months ago. You were really trying hard to get it finished before that third child came.
Yes, that's right.
And I don't know how many late nights or early mornings or both you were doing to make sure that happened, but I think you accomplished your task.
Well, you know, it is. I told my wife about that time, since we were thinking about childbirth. It's like literary childbirth, giving birth to a manuscript, and then you send it off to a publisher in New York City. And 3 weeks later, you get all these massive edits, and you just hope they don't tell you to rewrite the whole thing.
Right,
and it was a humbling process. It takes a lot of time.
Yes.
But ultimately, thankfully, they were true to the original concept. They didn't tell me to change or take a different perspective. And ultimately, I think his words really endure. Good citizenship, and people think about citizenship, and they think about voting or jury duty or protesting.
Right.
And that's what citizenship.
Yeah.
Teddy Roosevelt says the exact opposite. He says citizenship. The word he uses first is efficiency, meaning the measure is how good are you at being the person you can be in the spheres of influence that you have.
Which is excellent.
Which is excellent,
yes.
Right? So he talks about the willingness to work.
Yes.
As a bedrock. Do you care about others more than your family, or are you willing to provide for your family? The willingness to fight. Stand up for things you believe in, either by force of arms or in principle.
Yeah.
Strong, healthy families. Lots of children.
Yes.
Demographics, which I can talk a lot more. He talked a lot about demographics. You look at Europe today, demographics is a powerful subject. No one wants to talk about it, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
And then the final aspect is character, whether informed by faith or by civic virtues. Others, you have to raise men and women who have good character. Otherwise, our founders understood that. George Washington understood that without religion, it's an indispensable support of free peoples.
Right.
Roosevelt talked about that too, but he didn't obsess over it. It wasn't the only thing he talked about. But he said, hey, this is a key ingredient. So I love his articulation of citizenship because it makes you point at yourself and say, am I doing what I should be doing in my own life before I wave a sign outside and tell everybody else how they should live? And if we all thought that way a little bit more, I think we'd be in a better spot.
Oh boy, wouldn't we ever. Things have definitely changed. We are a far cry from that. But that's why you're writing the book, Pete.
Yeah.
And I love that, because you are calling people to really take a look at what made this nation free. Why is it exceptional? And I'd like to talk about that on the other side of this break, too, because that's something that many Americans take exception with.
Sure.
And so I'd like you to address that as well.
Yeah.
But your book is outstanding. I have begun to read it. I actually started to read it, and my husband took it away from me, and he's finished reading it and loves it. So now I'm just now starting it again, so I'm excited. But it is really outstanding. We've been very impressed.
Well, I'm grateful for the opportunity to talk about it today.
All right. We'll come back after this break, and we'll be talking more with Pete Hegseth on his book, In the Arena.
No education. We don't need no thought control.
We're back, and today we're talking about my co-host Pete Hegseth's first book, In the Arena, and it's slated for release this coming Tuesday, May 3rd. So, Pete, I am just so excited for you, and I know that you worked very hard at this, and I know that it's going to really have a great impact on this nation and all the citizens in it. And when I was reading it, there was a quote that's kind of long, and I'd really like you to read it, that okay. really, I think, highlights kind of where we're at in our culture.
Sure.
And I would like you to read that with your own words.
Sure, I will. I'll read a section, and it's in a section talking about why America is exceptional, some things like that, and I'll jump right into it. Mm-hmm. I wrote, but we look out at America today and realize that tragically, the spirit of Teddy Roosevelt's speech, the speech I write about, has been snuffed out. At home, we teach our kids to be environmental evangelists, but not economically self-sufficient. We give all our kids a fifth-place trophy, but not the tough love of failure that breeds development, improvement, and ultimately earned success. We put our kids in bike helmets and pink ribbons, but we don't gird them for the hellish threats of systemic Islamic intolerance and female subjugation. We teach them to be unbendingly tolerant without teaching them that America is the world's ultimate melting pot, where race, class, and gender ought have no bearing on your ability to succeed as a citizen of the Republic. We teach them that war is hell, but not that injustice and subjugation are far worse. We are a coexist culture, taught to tolerate the militant dogma of blind multiculturalism while marginalizing the timeless, unique, and colorblind principles America was built on. And it ends with a popular postmodern bumper sticker reads, "Think globally, act locally." Reviving Teddy Roosevelt would require an American citizenry that not only rips off that sticker, but replaces it with one Teddy would proudly approve of, "Think locally, act globally."
And so powerful.
Well, it's meant to remind us, remember who we are, and be proud of it.
Absolutely.
And because American exceptionalism is not about arrogance or bombast or pride or wealth. It's about a set of principles that were truly unique upon which we were founded.
Yes.
That gave us the opportunity to eventually be free and wealthy and powerful. Mm-hmm. But those are manifestations of core principles that we started
exactly.
with.
They're almost secondary to what is the most important. And I think sometimes people get confused by the word exceptional.
Yeah.
I think they think that's where they get the idea that it is almost kind of imperialistic or elitist, and yet not at all. That is not the point that you or anyone else, I would hope. I mean, there might be people out there that would use the word that way, but I know that when I use that word, when you use that word, we're looking at this as the foundation that this country was built upon is extremely important for us to return to in order for us to build the free society that we have now, or to protect the free society that we have now.
You are precisely right. Even when the founding happened, I mean, the rest of the world sort of scoffed at it and said, a constitution, a piece of paper isn't going to protect what you have there.
Yeah.
The French tried a revolution a couple of years later, and I talk about, because Roosevelt gave the speech in France, I compare America to France, and the French Revolution was very radical. It was extremely secular. It was very egalitarian, and it was militaristic. They chopped off the head of the king.
Yeah.
In America, it was meant to restore principles of small R Republicans to empower the citizenry to you have checks and balances. You believe rights are endowed by a creator, not by a king or a government.
Right.
It's freedom of religion, not freedom from religion, which we forget today.
Right.
These amendments of speech on the First Amendment and the right to bear arms in the Second Amendment are indicative of liberated and free people who are meant to govern themselves.
Right.
These are truly special ingredients that the world hadn't seen before and really doesn't even today rarely sees.
Right.
In fact, a stat I've heard, less than 1%, and it's in the book, of anyone who's ever lived on this earth has ever lived free.
Mm.
Most have lived under kings.
Less than 1%.
Less than 1% has ever lived truly free. Most have lived under kings or monarchs or theocrats or dictators, or they've lived in banana republics where their vote really didn't count.
Mm-hmm.
Over human history, we are truly the exception to the rule.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you come up with the word exceptional.
Love it. That is so great that you were able to explain that, Pete. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that is the reason why the word exceptional is used.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for you to actually describe it that way, I think makes it extremely clear.
I think part of our job, and at least as a conservative, is to recapture some of these words that have been taken over,
mm-hmm.
and to be unapologetic and proud of this country.
Yes.
In some ways, you know, the idea of America was always a bipartisan concept.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, and part of what I write about, I can't even remember what chapter it was, is reminding Americans of who we are, but also reminding Republicans to in small r or big r to be confident in those founding principles, because
yes.
we're starting to see a split in what the left in many ways believes
mm-hmm.
today
mm-hmm.
is antithetical
mm-hmm.
to a lot of the founding principles. When you have a socialist who's running neck and neck on that primary,
mm-hmm.
you've truly got a people who've forgotten how we got where we got with the hidden hand
right.
of a free market
exactly
and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just very excited that you're pointing this out, and I do think it's also going to give a sense of confidence in people who do believe this way but have been kind of subjugated to silence.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that you say in your book, I don't know that I could quote you directly, but you say something about you want to help people get out of that crouching position
yeah.
and get into the arena and fight the battle. And I think people have been subjugated to silence, those who believe this way, and they're intimidated, they're often mocked. And I think your book gives people something to stand on and something to give them confidence to speak out.
You have good memory. That's exactly what it is. Get out of the defensive crouch.
Is that what it said?
Quit being apologetic about
mm-hmm.
what we believe. The problem is that you're going to be assaulted.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be accosted. You're
mm-hmm.
going to be verbally abused, because there are powerful avenues, whether it's online or the media,
mm-hmm.
Where you will be criticized for the idea is to fortify people to say, but you're standing in the right.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the critic who counts.
Right.
It's not the one who points out how the strong man stumbles.
Mm-hmm.
It's the doer of deeds
mm-hmm.
who is actually worthy. It's the
mm-hmm.
one who's in the arena. You're going to fail. You're going to lose some friends.
Mm-hmm.
It is what it is. But you'll be able to look back and say, when I fought that curriculum change
yeah.
in that
mm-hmm.
local school mm-hmm. board, that was part of fighting back against mm-hmm. the things that are undermining our country. Because most threats don't come in the form of dictators or standing armies.
Right.
They're silent,
mm-hmm.
death by a thousand cuts, where
yes.
our liberties are taken away,
mm-hmm.
or political correctness strangles us.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't stand up in those small moments, small and large,
mm-hmm.
then our republic slowly slips away.
Because yeah.
And what Roosevelt wrote about in the book, and what I love so much about it, is really, citizens are the thin line between freedom and tyranny.
Mm-hmm.
And the bigger the citizen, the smaller the government.
Yeah.
The smaller the citizen, the bigger the government.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing our citizens get smaller and smaller, more selfish, more obsessed with their own rights rather than
mm-hmm.
their duties.
Right.
You know, seduced by this idea that man is perfectible,
mm-hmm.
that there is no right and wrong.
Right.
And then they're susceptible to class warfare,
right.
which splits us. And
mm-hmm.
we've seen that under Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen it turn into black against white, or rich
mm-hmm.
against poor, or
mm-hmm.
young against old. And
mm-hmm.
when you do that, you start to fracture the very foundations of your republic, which is
mm-hmm.
exactly what Roosevelt wrote about in 1910.
Interesting.
To that audience. And
right.
it's so applicable today.
Yeah.
That's why it was, I thought, a perfect vehicle.
Absolutely. You've done an amazing job of waking people up. I just absolutely love it. So we are going to be coming back here in just a few minutes
sure.
to talk about this a little further.
We'd love to talk a little bit about how it pertains to the to our foreign policy and national security. He's
absolutely.
Had a lot to talk about, sort of
yes.
citizens of the world.
Yep, yep.
And
okay.
we'll chat about it.
All right, that sounds good. We'll be back after the break.
We don't need no thought control.
Well, thanks again for joining us as we begin our third segment. We're talking with my co-host, Pete Hegseth, who wrote the book In the Arena. And we're really enjoying talking about this book. It's a fantastic one that I believe is going to really have a big impact in a positive way across this nation. And you're already getting some great attention, again, from Rush Limbaugh and from several others who are finding this book to be very representative of what we need to hear right now for those of us who believe that America is indeed exceptional.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate you letting me hijack Education Nation for a Saturday morning. So those of you who are wondering, Where's my education talk? We will be back next week talking about it, but Rebecca so graciously afforded me this half hour with the book going on sale in just 3 days.
Yes, May 3rd.
So, no, it's been a neat process. Grateful for all the support that has come in from people from Rush Limbaugh and Mark Levin and Oliver North and so many others who put out great statements in support of the book. It's humbling because you put out a work and you believe in it, and then you wonder how it'll be received.
Right. You have to be vulnerable.
You are, and mm-hmm. I know criticism will be coming. There's no doubt about it. There's some tough stuff in the book, but I hope to continue a conversation. I hope to motivate people. Mm-hmm. It's not meant to be. It's not gonna, you know, meant to be something that would win the Pulitzer Prize. It's mm-hmm. meant for you to pick up and be motivated by
yes.
it. Say, I want to be a part of what this nation represents. I want to go out and do what I can in my sphere of influence with my family and my community, serving my country, serving my state, serving something greater than myself
right.
in a society that doesn't do that very
right.
well right now.
And actually, Pete, it does tie into Liberty and Education Nation, because that's exactly what we are trying to do as well.
Right.
So your book is just completely in communion with what it is that we're wanting to do with our students at the school.
Well, I think you might earn a signed copy after this interview. And what I will say in it is deserved. I mean, you have been in the arena for this many years, starting a school, feeling like the schools aren't serving the next generation the way they should. That's what Liberty Classical Academy is about. That's why we do this show. That's why I send my 2 kids and soon my 3 kids there. Because I believe in filling their heads with things that reinforce the values of serving God, serving country, academic excellence.
Mm-hmm.
Those are things that are infused in Liberty Classical Academy, and I hope infused in this
mm-hmm.
book.
Yeah, well, thank you. That's a great compliment as well. So I want to turn our attention to another quote that really leads us to looking at things from kind of a foreign policy standpoint too, because you talk about, you know, what do we need to do as citizens here in America?
Mm-hmm.
But then also, we need to be looking at the forces that are working against us in
yep.
America. And so one of the comments that you make is, it says, the enemies of real human freedom are powerful. And they're swarming. I love that word, they're swarming, because that's exactly how it feels right now. America is the last best hope for the free world. And if we don't prevent her decline now, then we are failing to prevent the decline of the entire free world, at least what's left of it. Very powerful statement there.
And unfortunately, true. I mean, you look at freedom indexes, it's not going forward. It's heading in the wrong direction. And what I write about in the book is, you know, after World War II, our British friends were able to take a knee, exhausted by 2 world wars, and hand mm-hmm. the keys of the free world to this young America mm-hmm. prepared to step up.
Right.
If America stops leading today, who's behind us?
Right.
There literally is nobody else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when you look at what Obama's done over the last 7 years, sort of pulling us back, gutting mm-hmm. our military, undermining our prestige on the world, retreating from battlefields, mm-hmm. it's created this void and sense of chaos.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And everybody's wondering where America is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these vacuums will be filled. And what I write about in the book are sort of 3 civilizational threats. The radical Islam or Islamism,
mm-hmm.
Which whether it's the Islamic State or different manifestations, is there, is ready, wants its caliphate, is
mm-hmm.
got having lots of kids, and as we see in Europe, having massive impacts.
Right.
The Chinese dream and the Chinese civilization, they feel like it was a 100-year pause for them,
mm-hmm.
and that they're back on the scene. They're building islands in the middle of the South China Sea and
right.
seeking to push us out of that regime.
Yeah.
They've got a very different vision of what their dream looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And then I talk about international institutions and really globalists who believe that we'll be saved by one world government and this idea of a perfected humanity,
mm-hmm.
and it's international institutions mm-hmm. That are unaccountable and unelected
right.
are the future. And there aren't as many of those, but they're powerful,
mm-hmm.
and they centralize their power in Brussels or at the UN or elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're not careful about preserving what America represents, we can give away a lot of our sovereignty there too. If not America, then who is the central question?
Right.
And you can't, but you also can't maintain that, a belief that America should lead in the world, unless you have good citizens. And that's why the book is very intentionally set out into 2 parts,
mm-hmm.
good citizenship here at home,
mm-hmm.
and good patriots and American leadership in the world. Without good citizens, you know, everyone gets war weary, or they get tired, or why is our military so big? Why do
mm-hmm.
we have to deal with these enemies? Because if we don't, those enemies grow unabated,
mm-hmm.
and we've always had to fight for our freedom, whether it was the communists and the Nazis and everybody else.
Right.
The word I use in the book is history is not over.
Right.
History is never over.
Right.
Look at Europe today. They gutted their militaries to pay for their welfare state. They
mm-hmm.
gave up God a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically a museum sitting there saying, okay, we're good to go, and history is washing over
mm-hmm.
them, because
mm-hmm.
history is not over. It turns out you have to pay your debts.
Right.
And
right.
and a lot of implications, chickens are coming home to roost for them. And it, could be a preview of where America's headed. It doesn't have to be a preview,
right?
But it could be.
Thus, the timing of your book. And truly, because we can look at almost all elements of our culture and see that we are really following in the footsteps of Europe. We can look at it economically, from a foreign policy standpoint, from a religious standpoint, from
educational standpoint,
from every way. And yet, for some reason, it seems that there's many in our culture that don't want to highlight how destructive that has been to Europe. And I think it's only been getting highlighted recently with all of the terroristic attacks and infiltration of the ISIS type groups into the European culture, looking at some of the horrendous financial debt in, you know, Greece and what have you. I think that's finally starting to highlight some of the concerns, but I don't know if the average American is actually hearing that message. I think they're busy, and I'm not sure how much the mainstream media is actually talking about this.
You're exactly
right.
It's
a really important topic.
You make a fantastic point, and I think it comes back to the premise of Education Nation. It's because what kids are learning in their schoolroom today, it doesn't work in the real world.
Right.
Coexist cocoons, which I talk about in the book too. Well, what happens when you enter the real world and Islamists don't want to coexist with you,
right. And
international institutions are undermining you, or the Iranians really do want a bomb, or the Islamic State is cutting off the heads of Christians? Are you going to coexist with those people,
right,
or are you
going
to stand firm in your belief that freedom and free markets and free peoples and freedom of religion and pluralism are important and be willing to fight for them?
Right.
The problem is we're led by a citizen of the world, and Roosevelt talks so beautifully in his speech about the implications of being a citizen of the world as opposed to a citizen of America or a republic. We're led by a citizen of the world that doesn't believe America's exceptional. And as a result, a lot of his actions have created more vulnerabilities for us.
Mm.
So
very, very frightening for the future. But also, I'm filled with hope when I read a book like this and when I look at what's being done at, you know, our school and, you know, through other schools like it across the nation. I really do believe that there is time for us. And that's one of the things that I think you like to point out in the book as well, that you're writing this book for such a time as this. It is time for us as Americans to stand up and fight
America
for this republic.
America is still special.
Yes.
You know, Roosevelt slingshot America into the 20th century, into the lead. We can slingshot ourselves into the lead of the 21st century. All the seeds are there.
Yeah.
If we can... elect leaders. No, it starts with citizens who then believe in America, and eventually we're going to need some leaders willing to do some tough stuff at big levels.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm hopeful. I am. This is not a indictment of America.
Right.
This is how do we recapture our spirit and be great.
I love that. So Pete, tell us about where we're going to find this book. I know it's coming out on May 3rd.
Comes out on Tuesday, so it's coming out soon. You can buy it online anywhere. Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can get the physical hard copy book. You can buy the audio book, which I narrated myself.
In 24 hours, which just blows my mind.
So crazy experience reading your entire book in a sound booth. And then you can also go to any bookstore on May 3rd and it will be available. Barnes & Noble, local bookstores. And then I've got a couple of events coming up too that folks might
Exciting.
Be interested in. I'm going to spend my first week with the book in New York doing a lot of work at Fox News and talking about the book. But then I'm back here in Minnesota on the 10th of May, which is Tuesday night. I'll be at the Barnes & Noble in Harmar.
Mm-hmm. 7 p.m.
In Louisville. So 7 p.m. on the 10th, Barnes & Noble in Harmar. And then on the 13th, which is Friday night the 13th, I guess Friday the 13th.
Oh,
I didn't even think about that.
That's okay.
We're filming
we're
this.
We're not superstitious.
That's all right. We're here at KLBB in downtown Stillwater recording this, but that event is also in downtown Stillwater at the Valley Bookseller at 6 p.m. So the 10th at Harmar in the evening at Barnes & Noble, and the 13th at the Valley Bookseller here in Stillwater are the two book events. So I'll be signing books. You can buy books. I'll be giving a talk about the speech as well. Would love to see as many people as possible.
Absolutely. And now I would encourage everyone to come and meet Pete. He's an incredible young man. I call him young. He's 35. Compared to me, he's young. And I'm just really impressed with what he has to offer through this book. And I would encourage you to come and meet him. I know it's going to go big. It's going to go viral. And so you're going to want that signed copy before it does go viral. So join us next week when we come back with you in your homes with Education Nation. We are going to address a really big issue right here in Stillwater. The bold plan. I'm sure all of you have heard about it, so we look forward to talking about
that. It's huge implications for education generally, but also obviously this district.
We
said we'd tackle the tough topics on Education Nation. We'll be back talking education next week on that topic.
Right here in Stillwater. Thanks.